Hi, this is Jennifer Dean speaking to you from the County Cider Company in Wapoos in Prince Edward County, Ontario, Canada, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 137. Welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are in Ontario, speaking to a maker at a cidery that's been around since 1996. So there's some parallel universes here going on with cider startups in the U.S. of A. Albeit, though, we know that cider is happening all around the world. So before we get to that conversation with County Cider's Jennifer Dean, we're going to get some updates out and about in Ciderville. Last week, I was in California, Southern California, which allowed me to, one, attend my nephew's wedding, which was tons of fun. Just absolutely tons of fun. And if you follow along on Instagram, my handle is CiderChat Ciderville. I posted a little photo, a fun photo of some members of my family in the photo booth. You know how they have that set up at weddings. And I just don't normally share those kind of more personal posts on Instagram, what's going on with me, but the fact, I don't know if this speaks volumes about my family, but we have a long tradition of drinking and celebrating. And luckily, we really play well together. We often will, you know, rent a house when we all meet up in wherever locations, typically somewhere in California, because that's where the bulk of my family lives these days, and just do a lot of celebration and celebration typically always involves libations, fun libations. So that photo booth was interesting because there was a lot of libation props that you could use. And if you don't know what a photo booth is, they are set up at weddings and let you dress up in like silly costumes. So that's what we did. And I shared that on Instagram if you'd like to check that out. While I was also there, I was able to stop in at two cideries. So I had a chat with Dave Carr at Raging Cider and Mead. That's in San Marcos, California. He's doing a lot of barrel aging there. And what was striking to me is that of all the cideries in Southern Cal that I know of, he is the only one that is just fully wild yeast. And that's a big step to take, because wild yeast are, they're renegades. I mean, they go rogue whatever way they want to go, and you have to roll with it. So it's fun to see Dave doing this new startup. He opened in November of 2017, so not even 1 year. And as you walk into the tasting room, there's a large wall of barrels from floor to ceiling. I think he said around 24 barrels. I'd have to look at the picture to count. And he's kind of learning the woes of barrel management. So certainly that episode on barrels and batonnage is a good one to listen to for anyone like Dave who is working with barrels, trying to make sure that you manage when barrels evaporate. That's not that the barrels evaporate, but there's always some liquid from the barrel that's evaporating out. And that's always called the angel share. Typically, it's about 6%. But when you're in a climate like Southern California, that's a lot to manage, even with AC and cooling. That's why barrels really love to be in like dark, cool, kind of like slightly humid places. But with that said, his ciders were very tasty, and he definitely likes funk. So wouldn't say it was overly funk at all. It was pretty good and rock solid for Southern California. So way to go. And I also was able to speak to Kat Fleming of Iron Bark Cider in Claremont, California. Now, that was my first stop. As soon as I landed, I headed out to Claremont and showed up at this cidery, and I recorded an episode with her, so I'm going to hold tight on most of it. But what a heck of a time we had. She is absolutely delightful. If you're out in Claremont or passing by, say you fly into Ontario Airport, which is a little north of Palm Springs, or even Palm Springs itself, you could head out to LA there and stop in. It's really easy to get to. It's a beautiful area. Claremont has, I think, like 5 colleges, all different kinds of varieties. So it's like a hip kind of area at the base of this large mountain called Mount Baldy. We went through a whole flight of her cider. She's doing very modern ciders. Again, we'll hold off on that. But the evening went on to dinner with she and her husband, Jim, and another friend, Jim. And then we went over to her house and sat out by a fire. I mean, that is just the way I like to sit down with cider folk and really get into it. They are outstanding people. She has an amazing setup, a really feminine touch to her cider bar, which they have their fermenters right there. You could hear them bubbling in the background. And I was just blown out of the water just hanging out with her. So do check that out and wait for an upcoming podcast episode with Kat. Up next, I'd like to talk about a little message and note and donation I just received from Portugal. It always makes my day when I see the PayPal notification that someone has sent in a donation. And this one, as I said, came in from Portugal, and it's from Joe, who is now living there, though he is not Portuguese from what I could gather. And he writes that he loves the podcast, and I'm so delighted to hear that, Joe, because I love producing this podcast like nobody's business, certainly to like check in with folks like you. And he writes, I am in Portugal and trying to figure out how to begin making cider here. There's lots of info from various sources. Listening to you helps me dial in. I want to strike a balance between practical and romantic. Don't we all? Between investing and cheap, between funky and presentable. I love the idea of wild yeast fermentation, but maybe I use some SO2 so it doesn't become so weird that I freak out and go to the other extreme next year. Actually, I think that's a really good idea. A lot of people do that. Not all makers do, but you know, I think some of the makers that I find out who don't use SO2 initially with wild fermentation have like a terroir already in their cider house that's been created for a year. And what I'm talking about there is that there's that in-house cider wild yeast already present. And so it's so dominant that it seems that it does its own course. So that might not be a bad idea until you really get a rock solid terroir in your own location. He writes also, I think I found a source for apple juice nearby so I can practice a little before apple season in September and October. So that's the time they do it in Portugal. And if you don't know where Portugal is, it's south of Spain. And we did have a Portuguese maker, actually the first Portuguese cidery to open in this country since a long, long time ago, because they really lost the tradition there. And I believe that was episode 80. And you'll be able to, that's with Marlena Arruja. And I'll put a link in the show notes to that if you want to listen to that. That was also helped with the translator Anzu Fernando. For those of you who know Anzu, he's Asturian and very involved in the cider promotion there. Works with La Sidra, but he's also a doctor too, studying to be a neurosurgeon. Anyways, moving on, back to Joe's letter. So you wrote also that I've also started mapping the apple trees in my area, and so this really caught my eye. Now I have to figure out the reality of hand processing. He's thinking 3 to 4 hours for 5 gallons. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of options for you to do there, buddy. Once you get those apples, you do need a bulk of time, but you could grind them up and create the pumice, let it sit for 24 hours, do a maceration, if you will. Some people are just grinding it up and letting it sit overnight. I've done this myself with some peri pears and just letting it sit overnight and doing like what is called like a free run, no pressing at all. Or that you actually press and then again, let it sit overnight and then press down again in the morning. So it really depends on if you have the space to do something like that. He writes, anywho, I'm not in the position to be a patron of the Patreon page that we have set up for Cider Chat, but I wanted to say thank you. I love this piece. I'm not sure what you could do with $5.62, but I'll leave that to you. And one more piece here is that he wrote that he was a professional brewer 20 years ago until diagnosed with celiac. And celiac, it means that you are gluten intolerant. And as far as how far can $5.62 go? Well, sometimes I'm taking like a $7 Uber ride or Lyft ride to my next podcast recording. So every little bit helps. There's a $5 level per month at the Patreon page. So it does help, buddy. It helps a lot. So thank you. Keep us posted. We want to hear what's going on in Portugal for you. I'm sure wherever you are in Ciderville, you have had the same experience when you go away somewhere and you come back and you have to like get back into the gear of things. And one thing that happens is dealing with mail. So, you know, you're kind of looking through, and in my life, it's all like bill, bill, bill. And then I saw this like little, gift card envelope. I'm like, what is this? It says New York State. And I recognize the person's name. And I open up this little card and it says, I'd like to donate to Cider Chat. And there was a check for $100, which basically, when you're a podcaster, it's like being a cider maker where you're really kind of trying to kick it up. But unlike being a cider maker, people are coming to my bar and drinking, you know, the knowledge and the connection. I'm always hearing, Rhea, you're connecting me and all that. But it's kind of like an open bar, you know, like at the wedding I was at. And so getting that donation from Marcus just brings tears to my eyes, man. So thank you so much. You know it's going to go into good use, and couldn't have come at a better time. Thank you very much. And if you are interested in supporting this podcast, just go to ciderchat.com. You find all these ways to do that, and hopefully just by listening is part of the encouragement to do that. Thanks again. And when we come back, we got another letter from an importer. So just hang on a minute for that. It's going to be kind of interesting. It'll be a follow-up from a conversation that we had with Joe Getz of Current Cider. Bit of pounding rain in the background, maybe some thunder rolling through, because yet again, while I am doing the editing and producing of this year week's episode, we have a storm rolling through. But that's what happens in July in this part of Ciderville. We're going to hold off on another letter that came in from James Asbell of Ciders of Spain. I'll push that over to next week so we could go right to our main chat with Jennifer Dean at County Cider, which is, as far as I know, like one of the oldest cideries in Canada post-prohibition. The interesting thing about Canada is that, like the U.S., just their neighbor to the south, they also experienced prohibition too, and it did have an impact on their cider production. But things got up rolling again, and one of those cideries that was really at the forefront was County Cider. Now, that was founded by Grant Howes, who unfortunately passed away just a little over a year ago in January of 2017, unexpectedly due to a heart attack in his sleep. So we certainly dedicate this week's episode to Grant, who, as we might say, maybe when I was a kid, I always thought when I heard thunder in the background that it was folks up there in heaven, the angels, bowling. So maybe Grant House is up there drinking cider and having fun with friends and looking down kindly upon what Jennifer Dean and the folks at County Cider and everyone out there in Ciderville is doing now. So this week's episode, I also should say, is sponsored via the trip that I took to Ontario earlier this June with Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. He made this week's episode possible for me to bring it to you. So thank you, Ryan. And you should definitely follow Field Bird Cider and Ryan Monkman on Instagram. He puts out the most amazing photos and mini little snippets of wisdom. A great man and really a beacon of inspiration for Ontario and Canadians alike. So let's go right to this chat where I had said goodbye to Ryan and was now on my way back to the U.S., but I knew I could not leave Prince Edward County, which is on the north shore of Lake Ontario, before stopping at County Cider. And it is out in this like rural area. It's absolutely exquisite. That time of year that I was, there were lilac bushes on either side of the roads, these narrow little fun country roads with big sky country, just in full bloom, absolutely spectacular. And the other piece that was really neat is that a lot of the homes had Canadian flags, which is the red maple leaf. And so it's a red and white flag. It's actually very stunning. And they weren't like kind of like, hey, we're Canadians. Or maybe some people were like that, I'm sure. But it was just kind of like a coat of arms. So that was, it's really kind of like nice and gentle to see in the landscape. It's a beautiful area, and I sure hope that this inspires you to come along on the Totally Cider Tour headed to Ontario in 2019. One of the stops we will be making will be a County Cider Company. So stay tuned for those details in subsequent episodes coming up on Cider Chat. In the meanwhile, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Jennifer Dean of County Cider Company, located in Wapoose, which is on Prince Edward County, kind of like an island there, but not, in Ontario, which is a province of the mighty and glorious country of Canada.
My husband founded the company in 1996. This was already a commercial apple operation. Yeah. His family bought the farm in the mid-70s. And he wanted to do some value-added product with the apples, so he started making cider.
Perfect segue into a value-added product that really brings another element, right, with the apple.
Exactly.
Were you involved at that point?
At that point, no. I didn't come on board until 2000. I had trained as a winemaker, and he hired me as a winemaker because he was also growing grapes. Mm-hmm. And I became the cider maker as well. And then eventually we got out of the wine business just to concentrate on making cider.
And why was that? Because this is a big wine area.
It is
too.
A big wine area. Yeah. And we were actually one of the first 10 wineries to open. We were the first to get a winery license mm-hmm. in Prince Edward County. Mm-hmm. But after a few years, there were so many wineries opening up. We just didn't feel the need to compete with them because we were the only cider company operating in Ontario at the time. So we wanted to concentrate on expanding that market.
Which is huge. Post Prohibition in Canada, you were the first commercial operation. Is that correct?
Not really. There were other cider companies.
In Ontario.
In Ontario. Okay. There was Barnell and perhaps a couple of others.
Oh,
but
okay.
The market wasn't very friendly towards cider. We're treated like an import, mm-hmm. taxed the same way. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to make money. Mm-hmm. So those ventures failed, and we just persevered.
Well, bravo for you, because that's not easy when you're kind of breaking ground in that way. Now, driving up here, which is just absolutely exquisitely beautiful, and you know, we're up in this house overlooking
Prince Edward Bay,
mm-hmm. and that's Lake Ontario, part of Prince Ed.
That's right.
Right, Prince Edward Bay is part of Lake Ontario, and we're just sloping down into, you know, the water there. You have a lot of orchards around here. What was it like back in 1986? If I was driving up the same road, would I have seen the same tending towards apple trees, or were the apple trees kind of being put to the side and wine?
No, I'd say that there were even more apple orchards back then. Mm. Unfortunately, a lot of apple trees have been pulled out in Ontario in the last couple of decades. Ontario had a pull-out program.
Mm-hmm.
And
A pull-out program.
So they were paying farmers to pull out trees, but they weren't paying them to replant new ones. So people weren't doing that. Mm. Other provinces did offer replant programs, but mm-hmm. Ontario didn't.
Why were they paying? And it was called pull-out program.
It's a pull-out program. So the idea was to encourage farmers to plant new varieties.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But they just took the money and went, no, we're not planting anything else.
Yeah. Well, it's hard farming. So, you know, you can't.
Especially if the younger generation's not getting involved. And mm-hmm. we're finding that more and more. Trying to pass the family farm down is becoming increasingly hard.
Even in cider?
Even in cider. Mm. I actually don't have anyone to pass this down to.
Mm, mm.
My kids aren't interested.
You've seen a lot in the past 20 years, no doubt. And
yes.
So what is the biggest, like, bell curve that you've seen, or and how recent is that you've seen any kind of, like, uptick in cider, or is it just kind of level for you all these years?
No, it's been a huge uptick, especially in the last 10 years, I'd say. Because we were the only cider company for a long time, it was hard slogging. We had general list products available through the Liquor Control Board of Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And we've struggled to stay there. But over the last 10 years, there's been so much of an increase in the number of other cideries opening up, which has been a good thing for the whole cider industry mm-hmm. in general.
Mm-hmm.
We're now finding that the competition is causing our sales to plateau a little bit.
Mm.
So we've got to stay on top of things.
Mm-hmm.
We've been growing cider varieties of apples for a long time, beside the dessert or culinary mm-hmm. apples that mm-hmm. we first started
mm-hmm.
using.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of cideries that are opening up now that aren't growing their own apples. And I think that's a mistake. I think it's a shame that they're not, that they're actually just bringing juice in from wherever they can in Ontario and making cider from what they don't even grow. I think you need to have a sense of what you're growing to make a truly good cider.
What cider varieties are you using here? What do you have growing?
So we have some Kingston Black, Dabinet, Michelin, Yarlington Mill, Binet Rouge, Brown Snout, mm-hmm. Frequin Rouge. So quite a number.
Yeah. And how are they doing in this climate and on your soil?
That's been a challenge, trying to figure out which ones grow best here. And we're also trying different trellising methods. So we're doing tall spindle, and we're doing different rootstocks and training methods.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been a challenge, especially over the last year and a half.
Can you say more about that?
The founder of the company, Grant Howes, my husband and partner, passed away a year and a half ago. And he had all these plans, and I think a lot of them were in his head and not written down. So I'm trying to carry on the best that I can, because he was the one who grew the apples, not me. So I've had a steep learning curve with apple growing and spraying and looking after all that side of things, mm-hmm. beside just making the cider in the production facility and running the retail store and the restaurant here on the farm. Mm-hmm. So it's been...
It's a big one. Yeah, I'm sorry for your loss. It was kind of untimely.
It was, yes. Yeah. It was unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... when I heard a little bit of the story and was kind of doing a bit of research, I thought about how long you've been in the business, it reminds me quite a bit of West County Cider in the
yes.
U.S.,
with Judith and
Terry
and
Maloney.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
And Terry Maloney was really the cider maker and just had a very untimely death. There was an industrial accident in cider making. And so Field Maloney, the son, has yeah. taken it on, but it's not necessarily, you know, something that he wanted to do. So yeah. it was, you know, sometimes these things happen. So
Yeah. He was quite a force to be reckoned with in
yeah.
cider.
Yeah.
Some people call him the grandfather of cider in Ontario, which that moniker really wasn't what he wanted to call himself. Mm. He'd rather have been called the godfather, I think, because he really enjoyed The Sopranos and The Godfather and that. So I think the godfather would
awesome.
Be what he would like to be called of cider in Ontario. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that title. That really works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people really yeah. look to County Cider.
Yeah, we've helped quite a number of the cidery startups. Pommies and West Avenue mm-hmm. are two in particular mm-hmm. who became very good friends with us.
Yeah, awesome. So here you are at this other stage, because, I mean, listeners who aren't involved in making it, need to know that you have the orchard care and then you have the cider making, and those are two really separate, distinct skills. A lot of people do them together,
mm-hmm. yep.
and it's great if you can. So how do you manage all that? Are you bringing in, if your kids aren't involved, how are you doing that? Is it like apprentice programs or?
We have a lot of different ways that we utilize employees. So we have really good people to start with. I have a really good production manager who runs the production facility, which is in town, actually, in the industrial park. I have a good tasting room manager and a good restaurant manager and good farm people. We bring in students from Loyalist College to do internships.
Which is in
Belleville.
We have
a college. So they do mm-hmm. Different programs, chemical engineering, biochemical different ones, and we bring them in and we work with them, and we've actually hired quite a few Loyalist graduates. We bring in French interns from the Agricultural College in Angers in France. I have two coming this summer who will be doing projects for us and living here at the farm. We have in the past brought in a number of others. We have students that we bring in through job placement programs locally that are funded in part by the government. Mm-hmm. So we've been pretty fortunate in accessing help.
Yeah, well, that's really key, because I've heard that it could be hard up here. I mean, you're in a tourist area, more summer
It's
homes,
very rural. We don't rural, have
yeah.
any public transportation out here. We're 15 minutes from Picton, and there's no public transportation there either.
Right.
So you really rely on people who have their own transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often young people don't. They have problems
mm-hmm.
with that.
Housing could be a...
Housing is a big problem
yeah,
here in the county.
Yeah. Well, to manage all that and to make good cider is a whole lot. So you're
doing It's a lot of
well.
Work.
Yeah. So with all those varieties and your background, in that time that you've been making cider, what has changed stylistically for you, or has there been anything that you've kind of, honed the skill, kind of, your workflow has changed in a way? Could you speak about that?
Yeah, so because we were a commercial apple operation, we started making cider with the fruit we were already growing. So Northern Spy, Ida Red, Golden Russet,
mm-hmm.
And a few other varieties. And starting to grow the cider varieties of apples at that point
mm-hmm.
and gradually incorporating them. So they're part of our blend. There's one variety or one product that we make called a tortured path, which is our homage to English Somerset style cider. And that's 50% bitter sharp, bittersweet, and the balance is golden russet. So we happened to be visiting at Thatcher's in England, Grant and I, and a Land Rover pulled up while we were walking through the orchard. And this old gentleman didn't even get out of his vehicle. He just rolled the window down and started chatting with us. And he was telling us about a new piece of equipment that he was having made that would subject the trees to a tortured path as it went through to harvest the trees, that would shake the trees, right? And Grant liked that expression, a tortured path. So when we came back, we made a cider and called it a tortured path. And it was after he had driven off, we found out that the gentleman was actually John Thatcher, the owner of the company. So,
yeah, Thatcher Cider Company. Wow, yeah. That's really cool.
When I got to meet Martin Thatcher at CiderCon a few years back, I related that story to him and gave him a bottle of our tortured path cider.
That's fun. I mean, that's what cider's about, is having, you know, seeing the whimsical. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think the apples really lend itself in that way. Yeah, so you have traveled about, and there's one thing I've noticed in Canada in particular is that lineage with the UK.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely, most definitely. And so overall with your cider-making styles, are you using cultured yeast, or are you doing any kind of wild ferments? I saw barrels out here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe doing a little bit of both?
Yes. We have always used cultured yeast.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We do experiments with wild yeast.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually sending a keg of wild fermented cider off to a wild ferment festival in Toronto next week. But it's not something that we like to do a lot of. Because mm-hmm. we sell so much of our product commercially through grocery stores and the LCBO, the product has to be shelf stable. We can't take chances mm-hmm. like some other products might be able to do. If you're selling straight from your farm stand or your retail store, you can probably do that and in smaller batches.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We need to be careful of what we're doing commercially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we use commercial or cultured yeasts. We do an ice cider that we barrel age, but we don't really do any other barrel aging of our ciders. The barrels you see outside are actually left over from our winemaking days.
No kidding. Well, they last a long time, don't they?
Yes, they
do. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So ice cider, you do it in the classic way that is so well known up in Canada, putting it outside to freeze.
Picking frozen apples off the trees.
Ooh, holy cazoli.
Yeah.
Wow, who do you get to go out and do that?
Well, you know what? It's not so bad if you go out there on a nice sunny day and, the apples don't, you can't press frozen apples.
No.
Because it would be like trying to press a billiard ball.
Right.
So they actually desiccate a little bit. So they freeze and thaw and they lose their water. And what you're pressing are pulpy bags of sugar. The aroma is incredible too.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time.
So can we talk about that process? Because you're actually the first maker that I've talked to who, I know that this is done. And it's done up in Canada. But I haven't had the opportunity. So mm-hmm. it kind of like, wah! You go out, what time typically, or you're doing it by temperature, what's happening outside?
Yeah, so unlike ice wine,
mm-hmm.
we aren't regulated by how we have to pick the apples for ice cider.
Bonus.
With grapes, you have to go out and pick them and press them when it's like minus 8 to 10 degrees for 3 days, and mm-hmm. usually that's in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to do that, so we just pick the apples when we feel that they're ready and then press them. And we use a basket press.
I was wondering how you did that.
That's why it's a lot of work. So it trickles out so slowly.
Yeah. Do you do like a first run ice cider or anything like
that? No, just mix it all together. And we don't do it every year because it's a lot of work. And even to leave the apples on the trees can stress the trees.
Sure. The weight.
So you can't leave the same block every year.
And how do you leave the apples on the tree? Why aren't they just falling off?
I know. Well, it's the varieties that you choose.
So
some of them aren't native to this area, and they don't know they're supposed to fall off the tree.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
They'll stay hanging on the tree.
So what variety would that be?
Ida Red is.
Ida Red. No yeah. kidding. So they just kind of hang out there going like, okay, I'm going to come out and pick us. We're waiting. Come on, folks. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not going to pick us. We're just going to freeze out here then.
And it's so pretty. If you get if you get out there on a winter's day and there's snowfall and the sun is out and there's lovely little red apples with snow on them.
My goodness. And how many of those trees do you have?
Well, like I said, we change different blocks.
Oh, I see.
And we don't do it every year.
Right,
so.
Okay. Wow,
amazing. We've got a few acres of Ida Reds.
That's incredible. Wow. You go out, and when you're actually pressing in the basket press, is it so mushy that it's hard? You know, like with pears, mm-mm. people have put in the rice hull or something, but...
No, because it's still quite frozen.
Okay.
Yeah,
so.
They're not completely thawed.
Yeah. And what... is your yield, if it's trickling out,
yeah,
it must be over a couple of days.
It takes about 80 apples to make a 375-mil bottle of cider.
That's a lot of apples.
It is.
That's crazy making.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what a labor of love. And you chose to do it that way versus get the juice, have the juice, and then freeze the juice. Why... it's kind of a purist way, a little bit.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. She tilts her head to the side and gives a smile. I mean, that kind of says it all.
Yeah. There are other ways of doing it.
Yeah.
We just...
is your choice.
Yeah.
And do you have a certain amount of time that you try to keep it in the barrel? Is there like...
If we're doing... because we don't barrel age all our ice cider, mm-hmm. only a portion of it.
Okay.
So usually two barrels.
Okay. And then you blend in.
No.
No, you don't blend it.
So we do two different ice ciders.
Oh.
We do one barrel-aged and one not barrel-aged.
How come? Just a taste variation for,
yeah,
for
it
folks?
Is.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
We were fortunate enough to get some special barrels made by a local cooper made out of four different types of wood. Cherry, hickory, oak, and ash.
Now,
and
that's a kind of unusual.
Very unusual.
So what... what does that, what would one expect it would lend towards the
so the hickory here? Certainly gives it a lot of smoky qualities.
Is it charred at all? Is it barrel mm-hmm. charred? Okay, all
yeah.
right, that's important.
Yeah,
know?
So there's the smokiness yeah. from the hickory, and then sort of creme brulee and orange caramel notes from the other woods that
my goodness.
Come through.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I've been talking a lot about barrels on this trip, and I've just been in heaven because I think it's a part of cider making that on this side of the world we're still kind of catching up to a bit, unless you have like a winemaking background or
mm-hmm.
you've been in it for a while. But a lot of cider makers, necessarily new cider makers, don't have that experience. So talking to Ryan Monkman about this at Fieldbird, you know, it's like if you're a winemaker, you can learn it through osmosis because you're out
yeah.
in the barrel room and doing that. But that's why my curiosity is so piqued. And can we say the name of the cooper who made that barrel?
Yeah, so Pete Bradford
okay.
is the cooper.
Still doing
yeah,
it locally.
Yeah, he's still, yep.
Wow.
He actually operates not only the cooperage, but a vinegar business.
Oh, cool. Wow. And in this town?
Yes, here in Picton. Yeah.
Great. I noticed in the town that there was...
artisanal cheese,
artisanal,
yes.
So okay.
we have Fifth Town, which is just down the road here. And then there's Black River, just in the other direction. But I wouldn't call them artisanal anymore because they've been taken over by Gailey Foods.
Are there any like little mini cider fests here in town at this point? Or
no,
apple fest?
No, not.
Yeah.
We do an apple blossom festival here in
Ooh.
The spring.
Ooh.
And
so it
this,
just happened.
It just happened.
Yeah.
In at the beginning of May, we did it Mother's Day weekend. Unfortunately, the apple blossoms decided they weren't going to come out until a week later.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't much of an apple blossom festival, but we sold a lot of apple pies and made some money for the local church.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yes.
I just love, I really love driving up here. It kind of blew my socks off.
Yeah.
Getting back to the ice cider, how do you deal with stopping the fermentation? is that like a filtration piece for
keeping it cool and
keeping it cool? Okay.
Yeah, keeping it cool. Yeah. Watching that, mm-hmm. and then at a certain point we have to filter it and add mm-hmm. some potassium sorbate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough one with the ice cider. A lot of folks, and like these hobbyists, you know,
because you don't want your ice cider to be dry. It needs that balance of acidity and sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes you get a little sparkling, and maybe that's not so bad after all in an ice cider. You know, some people kind of like it. So
yeah, we've never had that.
Well, good for you. I have heard it happens, but you know that's the way it rolls.
And we do just in kegs, mind you, for licensees, flavors that we don't put into bottles.
Okay.
So we're constantly making new things. So we're doing lavender lemonade and coffee cider, and we've done blackberry peach and peach ginger and quite a number of other ones. We've got a couple of new flavors coming out this season because everybody likes to have new and different.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's the way of
But I won't tell you what those flavors are yet.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Well, so that's a good thing to know. Like, how do folks get county cider? So they would go to your website, or they'd come here.
Yep, you can come here to the farm, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah, that's the best way. You should definitely come here.
Because it's beautiful, and you can have lunch on the patio and have a pizza from our wood-burning oven.
Nothing better than that.
So that's where we first started selling, was here at the farm and through the LCBO here in Ontario. Mm-hmm. We got a general list right off the bat as soon as we started making cider back in 96. And now we're available through the LCBO and the licensed grocery stores that are selling cider. So Loblaws and Walmart and a number of others.
So one could go to Walmart's and find your cider.
Yeah, if it's a licensed Walmart. Yes.
Okay, wow, that's amazing to know.
But just here in Ontario, we actually don't make enough cider to export outside of the country or outside of the province.
Mm-hmm.
We sell out of everything that we make every year.
Well, that's not a bad problem to have.
No.
Well, should we take a little walkabout and
let's go up to the tasting room?
Okay.
This is beautiful. I just want to talk about this building here. It's a barn with like a stone foundation. Is this called a certain kind of style of barn?
Probably is. I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay.
I just know that it was built in the 1860s to 1870s. And we used to use it for storage.
Wow. And now it's your tasting room.
And now it's our tasting room. We renovated it just 2 years ago. Because
oh my gosh.
We used to use just this building.
Yeah.
Over here, which is the old pig barn.
Oh, okay.
And as you can see, it's quite a bit smaller.
The pigs had a good view of the water. My goodness. They have one of the best views here.
Yes.
Oh, and the llama. And I've seen on barns around here this type of, it's almost like something you would see in like Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, that kind of like, what is it?
They call it a barn quilt.
A barn quilt. It's beautiful.
They are painted by a group of ladies here in the county.
Okay.
And they're sold to whoever would like to purchase one. This happens to be an 8x8, which they did just for us.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're quite reasonable, and the funds go to the ladies group.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And there's a quilt trail and a brochure, so you can. There's like 150 of them.
I saw one out by the sandbanks beach area on a red barn, and I took a photo, and I'm like seeing these. So there's a quilt trail. So I'll have to get the info where that is. That's just stunning. I mean, that alone to just come here and see the landscape, and I'm so impressed. That's a group of women, and so set up like a diamond on your barn here with a red border, and then it's a apple tree.
It's an apple tree.
But it has this kind of geometric type of, I don't know what you call it, like triangles and stuff, and then the apples are kind of placed on it. And I'll get a photo of that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's Absolutely. It's powerful. You know, it's a powerful. It really speaks. Beautiful. So the tasting room, you have an enter and an exit side because this place must get packed.
We get very busy here.
I bet you do.
Yes.
I bet you do. Cool. We walk through this reconverted pig barn, which is a stone foundation. It's all mortared and stuff. It really that field stone with a like a board and batten grade top to it. I don't know, pitched roof. And you walk through, and there's a welcome, like, little desk, and then there's a bar. You might have heard some of the music playing. But in the distance, these two French doors are wide open, and there's all these umbrella tables, Adirondack chairs, we'd classically call them, right in front of grapevines that are cascading down the hill with the view of Prince Edward Bay, and it is absolutely breathtaking. I happen to be here on a sunny day. I can only imagine the seasonal time seeing this experience just it lets your soul like drop into it. I mean, that's really what I've felt like in this area. It's like, if you want to like breathe in life, come here.
Yeah.
A beautiful, this must be what is
these are grapevines.
Grapevines coming over on an arbor.
Over the top of the patio here.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So you're making grape, you know, you're working with the grapes too for wine.
So this hill was totally planted with the grapes. We had Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Gewürztraminer, and some other varieties, Gamay. But after the trials and tribulations of Prince Edward County winters being so tough on some of those vinifera varieties, we ended up planting a Minnesota variety, Frontenac Rouge. And now they're just for show here. We don't spray these because we have so many tourists here and there's kids walking through.
Yeah, walking through. So you just let them go.
We just let them go. And if the grapes turn out to be half decent, there's a gentleman down the road who comes and takes them for his winemaking.
Oh my goodness. Commercially?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat. What is that commercial winery? Just in
That's
case folks wanted to have a connection.
Delgado Vineyards.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Just down the road.
Wow. And right next to it, you have some apple trees.
We have some apple trees. So we pulled all our Gamay out.
Yeah.
And widened the rows and planted apple trees. So those are all trellised in a tall spindle method.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're on a size reducing rootstock. So they're all on M9. And that just means that those trees are going to be quite small.
Mm-hmm.
The effort is going to be going into producing fruit rather than wood.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't get really big. These are already 4 years old.
4 years, yeah, they're cranking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's problems with that as well. Because the trees are slender, they're more prone to winter injury, disease pressures.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea is to do the fruit production, but also it will definitely assist in picking, right? And do you pick or do you shake your apples?
No, we pick.
You pick, okay.
Yeah.
Do you do ground drops? Because I know in Canada it's amazing. You could use ground drops.
Do shake.
Yeah.
Those bigger ones, we pick them up right away.
Right away, yeah.
So we
don't
pick anything that's fallen on the ground and is
and left there,
yeah.
I don't have a sense that anybody's really doing that, but you know, it certainly gives you a different, you know, opportunity than, you know, being stipulated that you can't take something off the ground. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, they've been doing that for years in
Once
Europe.
It starts fermenting and there's alcohol in there, it sort of takes care of all that.
I know. My goodness. No doubt. Well, so on any given day, this is throughout the summer season, this patio would be open. What time of year would you start opening?
We start the May long weekend or the weekend before that, which we did this year, Mother's Day weekend, and we go right to the end of October.
Nice.
As long as the weather lets us.
Beautiful out here. Oh, my goodness, Jen. It's just absolutely stunning. This is what I've been hearing. Like, you just got to go out to County Cider and just see the view. That alone is, like, breathtaking. Really nice. And it gets packed. I mean, this is an area that you could... Do you get, like, tour groups coming through?
We do.
You do? Coming through, and there's enough space for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. We do tutor tastings over in our retail store, or you can just go over there and taste whatever you like on your own.
Mm-hmm.
We do group tastings. So on weekends, we get quite a lot of tour groups coming through.
Very nice. And it is open 7 days a week in the
7 days a week in the season.
In the season, okay.
Yeah. And we're only open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. We don't do dinner. We're just basically a lunch sort of place.
So you got a lot going on here. You got like a team of people. We, you know, right around the corner, right off to the terrace, is this cool pizza oven that's cranking over there.
Over there now. Yeah.
How long have you had the pizza oven happening?
Well, as you can see, we have two pizza ovens now because the first one, which is quite old, 12 years. Okay. I think maybe more.
That's like like a cob style. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what you call it. And right next is like a metal piece
of one. So yeah.
Okay.
This is Sophia, and that one is like the Death Star.
I love the names. Great. Cool.
Because Sophia was getting old, and her floor was sagging in the middle. We need
Sophia
to fix her up. So we had to get another one, which is bigger, so we can do more pizzas.
Cool.
And we also have a grill, so we do burgers, we do a lot of shareable sort of items, and things that go well with cider.
Yeah, okay, so you could have a full complement here. I mean, you really come and just spend the day and drop into that.
And people do. They come and they sit in the Adirondack chairs with a book and just have a pint of cider and enjoy themselves.
I know. This is fantastic. So what is your, like, ABV level that you're always kind of shooting for?
6.5%.
6.5?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's sort of the natural alcohol level that comes out of the blend of apples that
okay
we use.
Yeah. Now I'm looking up there at your list. You don't only have cider.
No, on the patio we promote local beers as well.
Okay.
And local wines. That's not on there, but we do.
Okay.
Because we want to encourage people to go out and seek out these other places in the county.
Yeah. So there's a Belgian Wit, there's a Saison, and I'm not sure what Bose
Lugtred Lager. Yes.
Lugtred Lager, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Bose is actually just east of Ottawa in Van Cleek Hill.
Cool.
But Parsons and 555 Brewery are both here in Picton.
Very
we also carry Prince Eddie's Breweries and
what a compliment.
Signal and
yeah.
a number of others.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Well, should we go on over to that tasting room there?
Let's
take
a
peek. You got a big old Quonset hut there?
We do. That's where we all our press equipment is in
there. Oh, okay.
So we get that all out in the fall, and we spend about a month pressing apples every year.
Do you have apple storage on site?
No.
No cold storage.
And we have juice storage, not apple storage.
Okay. And how big is the basket press?
Okay, so we have a basket press with two baskets, which is... big.
Pretty big.
But we have a squeeze box, a good nature press
Cool.
the regular pressing.
So the basket press would
be just
used
for the ice art.
Oh, then I bet that's a wooden.
Yes.
And do you know, does it have like a scratcher connected to it? Is it like, I mean, I have a big old 1880s basket press. It's so freaking cool. 10 gallon baskets. But yours must be even bigger.
Oh, the baskets are...
Yeah, I would love to get a peek of that.
Yeah.
I would love if we could take a peek at that. I would love to, because I'm a kind of a press aficionado, or, you know, I'd love it. Oh, what a beautiful tasting room we just walked into. These beams up here that have, like, the live wood on top.
The beams are all original. They were hand-hewn.
Yeah, I could see
that.
And
very unusual, as you can see, because this one even here is a split.
Oh, yeah, look, they love that tree, and they want to integrate it.
Yeah.
I love it.
We did have to put new posts in and put in new concrete flooring.
It makes it accessible. Yeah, so you come in and Julie's right up front here at this cool, like, little, you know, where you check out everything. And you could get some swag with the cider girl. I saw that up there. What was that about?
A number of years ago, we had buttons made, and we had different sayings, and one of them was... We had cider girl, and those buttons everybody wanted them.
Some maple sugar candy.
And locally made butter tarts that
holy
are amazing.
Holy
Kingsley tarts, yeah.
Wow, this is just like a place that you just want to come in and just peruse and pull out your wallet and start going.
That's
at
right.
It.
You can grab a little carrier.
Oh, look at that little carrier.
And match your,
nice.
Ciders.
Very nice. And a good t-shirt for the Tortured Path apple cider.
That's right.
And the ceilings are, they're kind of like, 8-foot ceilings maybe?
Yes, yeah, it's a decent size.
Really well
we have
appointed.
A piece of Perspex here you can see through up into the top.
Oh my goodness,
see the old rope swing up in the hay mow there.
I can.
Look at that. Very cool. Is that area used for anything anymore?
No.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah.
Really neat. So let's take a little walk back here. Your presentation. These are your ice ciders here. And I'm seeing a lot of awards. Definitely. Little medals hanging everywhere. There's no doubt about that. That happens.
You know, we've entered our ciders in competitions over the years.
Great. Can we take a peek over at that cider press?
Yeah.
Would that be doable?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, when I heard like a big old one like that. Beautiful orchards. And I'm not sure if you said this yet, but so let me just make sure. How much orchards do you have here? And are they primarily all here, or are you pulling anywhere
else? We have two farms. We actually have another farm across the ferry towards Kingston in mm-hmm. Adolphus Town. And we have 10 acres of apples over there, and we have 25 acres of apples here.
Wow. Okay, so we just walked into the Quonset hut. And even before we got in here, I saw from outside this really cool-looking vehicle with County Cider Company on the back. And what is that vehicle with white wall tires?
Yes, so this is an old Metro van that my husband and his brother salvaged. And it sat on our property for a number of years just... No tires, no glass in it. It was just the shell. And somebody came and asked us if we would send them pictures of it. They wanted to use it for a commercial. And it was the Reactin van in a number of commercials.
Wow.
For that hay fever medicine, right?
Oh, my goodness.
And then my husband decided to make it into the Wapoose and County Cider vehicle.
So did they help get tires on it? That commercial really helped.
They did a little bit.
Clean it up a bit.
So we took it to a local guy. It took him a year and a half to restore it, and my husband never got to see it finished. I continued on and had it finished, and it's all been redone inside with old paneling.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. See the floor too well.
Wow, look at that.
It's all been redone.
Oh, yeah, look at the flooring. So the floor is oak paneling with like little metal stripping
that
kind of lay it down. And it runs, right?
It does run, but we want we only want to use it for local.
Yeah,
it's never going to go outside of Prince Edward County, basically.
Wow, that is super cool.
We can't take it on the 401. It's not insured to go on a highway.
Yeah.
Unless it's on a flatbed.
Right.
We took it to the Toronto Cider Festival last year.
On a flatbed.
On a flatbed.
Why not? I mean, it's kind of like people do have their little queens up, their garage queens that go in there. That is a super cool vehicle. In the back here by the boxes, and I see a bandsaw. Maybe no, it's not a bandsaw. Is that the press? That's a press, maybe. I don't know. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
look at that.
This is one of our presses.
Holy smokes. Look at that.
So it's pneumatic, so.
Yeah. So that's an oldie but goodie. And look at that basket press. I'm going to say those are like, those are like 50 gallon.
So that's
probably even more.
No, that
100
would be
gallon.
More.
100 gallon.
400 liters maybe?
Yeah. That's pretty big.
Yep.
And then here's the actual piston run. You see the size of that piston there and that plate. And the bottom plate that it goes onto is really incredible. And just here's the workings. Pretty stinking cool.
So at harvest time, this all gets turned into a big pressing operation. We have a huge bin that sits out here that all the apples get dumped into to get washed. and then a conveyor belt takes them up and inside, and then they go through the grinder and then into the box press.
Wow. Yep. Then it's a busy time for that whole month of pressing.
Yeah. And then in here is where we have our tank. So this is an old Apple storage box.
Here we go into the Apple storage barn.
So going along with the English tradition of naming your cider tanks,
mm-hmm.
Which we picked up when we were visiting at Weston's, this one is Pip. We used to have Squeak, but Squeak had to be repurposed because his belly started rusting inside.
Oh, boy.
But over here we have Jack.
Uh-huh.
And then we have Victor over there.
The big stainless.
Yeah, that's Jack and Victor from Young and the Restless. So they're in opposite corners, right? And this is Abbey Road.
Young and the Restless is a soap opera, for those who don't know. Yeah.
So this is Abbey Road. And in here we have John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
You're too funny. I love it.
Yay. So right now these tanks are being cleaned, waiting more juice to come in.
Wow, wow. Really, really cool setting. I mean, you really use the whole system. You have some nice big buildings here, you know, close to your home. So it's a mm-hmm. nice setup that way. And you're living right here, you know, really integrated into your life big time.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
I just think it's really important that we continue to plant and grow not just cider varieties of apples, but apples, because so many apple orchards have gone by the wayside. We used to have 4 or 5 of them just on this stretch of road that did pick your own, and now there's 1, I think.
Mm.
It's sad to see those sort of family outing traditions go by the wayside.
Yeah, and, nice
and
fall
to see
tradition.
The apple orchards just disappearing. I think it's really important for the health of the cider industry that we grow cider varieties of apples.
Mm-hmm.
We need that complexity. We need the tannin and the structure,
mm-hmm.
so your ciders aren't one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. They're not just sweet like mm-hmm. some commercial varieties I could name that are made from concentrates. And I think they're maybe good gateway ciders. They're good for people to get into cider mm-hmm. drinking, but then mm-hmm. once people start to drink cider, they look for better and quality mm-hmm. and different complexities. And
Yeah. Well, that's well said. You know, what's interesting, I hear this happening, I hear it happening in France. People are worried, like they're pulling up the pear trees. And we're not talking about baby pear trees. We're talking about
300-year-old
historical
pear trees.
Pear trees, you know, like, whew, stood the test of time, or apple trees. And so it is this kind of odd scene that's happening at the same time that cider is just desperate for the right fruit to make cider and perry. So I'm really hoping at this juncture in time that this, you know, all these like conversations that we're having is helping to kind of put the brakes on it and bring that to focus for people.
Mm-hmm.
Because how else will folks who aren't in the trade know that unless we kind of, you know, slam the drums hard enough to kind of put
That's
the
right.
calls from all the towers around the world, all the cider towers, like, whoa, wait a minute. This is like taking down a shrine somewhere around the world. This is a shrine to history, to our own lineage of the original, you know, fruit stories.
One of the rules that we do have here in Ontario is that in order to have a retail store on your farm, you have to be growing 5 acres of fruit. And there are people who are trying to get rid of that rule. If that happened, you'd see cider operations popping up in downtown Toronto. And that doesn't encourage the growth of apples or of farms in general. So I think it's really important to keep that rule.
Is there a way to kind of balance that? Because we do have this like growth in the U.S. of urban cideries. So if you can't do that, then you can't really have an urban cidery, right? It would all have to be a farm-based cidery. So,
You can open up somewhere else.
You just can't have a retail store on site, but you can still make cider and sell it to the LCBO or to bars
I see,
and restaurants.
I see. Yeah,
but
I
you
see
can't sell
saying.
It on your own.
On site. So you could have a tap room, you could have a cider bar, but people can't take it to go.
No, not so. Unless I think you can do it in growlers these days.
So that would be one step, one kind of halfway mark. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a perplexing. I could see your viewpoint on it, and I could also imagine folks in Ontario or, you know, other parts of Canada saying, well, wait a minute, you know, that could stop growth too at the same time, because, you know, right now in the U.S. we're seeing this influx of urban cideries doing exactly what you're saying, bringing in juice. And in turn what is happening is apple orchards that would normally like not be getting good value for their juice are now able to sell and starting to look at changing over and planting cider apples because they could.
There's a,
you know,
there's an inherent problem with that as well. And I spoke to Neil McDonald about this.
Oh, Neil, yeah, from Orchard Park.
Orchard
Park has sold, though. I don't know if Neil is still involved in it.
Oh, I don't know.
It.
I haven't spoken to him since I was May.
Oh, okay. I might be wrong about that.
Cider apples can only be used for cider. So there's really no secondary market for them. You can't sell them as commercial apples to a grocery store. They're not edible.
Right.
For the most part.
Right.
So if you're going to plant cider varieties of apples, you have to have a cider market for them, either for making the cider yourself or selling, having a contract and selling them to a cider maker. But you don't have to spray cider apples the same as you do commercial. So they're much more sustainable and they don't have to look pretty.
They don't have to look pretty. But sometimes they're biannual. I mean, you experience
that.
That's
true, too.
So that's kind of like, how do you fit that in, which really lends itself to being, an orchard-based cidery. You kind of build that in. But, you know, in this kind of day and age in 2018, moving quickly towards 2019 in the future, folks are like, you know, we want it and we want it now. And
not all of our trees, they go off on different years.
Yeah, sure.
So we still grow a lot of commercial varieties, of course, because that's the main, 85% of our juices, culinary or dessert apple juice. Mm-hmm. And then we blend in the cider varieties at up to 15%. So those trees don't have to be bearing every year because they alternate. Some of them will have have apples this year, and some of them will do it next year. So if you walked through at blossom time, you can see that. No apple blossoms on those trees, but these are all good.
Over there, yeah, isn't that fantastic? Yeah, well, I really appreciate your voice and your perspective, and it's important because you've been doing this for a while, and folks coming into the cider trade kind of hear all that. And the cool thing about what you do is that you've been around the map a bit. You know, you've been in the UK, you've been in the US, you've had these conversations. And I think the cider industry and young women getting into this trade, you're a beacon and a role model for that. So I really appreciate that. That's really, really special.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's fun, actually. I never envisioned. I mean, this isn't something that you think when you're a little girl. Oh, I'm going to grow up to be a cider maker.
Where did you see that?
Stumbled upon it. You know, I was in the hospitality industry for a long time, and then when I turned 40, I went back to school full time to become a winemaker, and that sort of segued here.
Wow. Yeah. It makes sense, though, and that's why you have a certain aesthetic at County Cider. You know, it's just really inviting. So you feel that hospitality. I was looking and I was like, wow, who's doing this branding? Who's setting this up? And now it makes perfect sense with your background.
We like to tell our staff that we are in the entertainment business here. We want people to have a great time, and we want them to remember our product when they walk into an LCBO store or grocery store and see our product on the shelves. They'll remember what a good time they had when they were here and buy it.
Well said.
big tip of the glass to Jennifer Dean and the team at County Cider Company. What a warm welcome I received. I enjoyed a pint of that Tortured Path cider that went perfect with the pizza made right there on site. Sitting down at a table overlooking Prince Edward Bay. Ooh, they got it going on there. It was absolutely delightful. If you want to see some photos and a mini video of this, you could go to thesiderchat.com page for this here episode 137. And you could also go to Cider Chat YouTube's channel where I will be uploading that video. And you could also listen to the podcast there too. So lots of options out in Ciderville, just like there's lots of options for apple trees to plant, just as Jennifer said, we need more orchards. There is nothing but goodness that comes out of that kind of task. Just so you know, there are more episodes coming up with Ontario Cider Makers that I was able to record while traveling about the countryside with Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. He made it so, which is really nice to not have to drive and drink and to be able to drop into a location and take it all in without necessarily having to think about too much except what is there before me. And to do some sightseeing too, the extra little curricular things like the cheese scene. And of course, there's Niagara Falls and, oh la la, Toronto. You know, a lot going on in Ontario, including some of the most amazing people on earth. So stay tuned for that. If you're interested, send me an email now that, hey, Rhea, put me on that list. I don't want to miss out, because I imagine it is going to be filling up and a ton of fun. Speaking of a ton of fun, the Normandy trip, we're getting closer. I mean, we're kind of like, I don't know, maybe under that 90-day point of departure date to land in Paris and then head out to Normandy. This is crazy, folks. I mean, I am just like, can't believe it. I sent out some info to the folks who are already signed up, and soon I'll be sending out a video on how to pack your cider, because everybody coming along gets to bring an extra suitcase dedicated to cider. How much fun is that going to be? And just kind of looking over where we're going, we're going to be seeing some beautiful gardens. We're going to be going to like a classic like French deli. Actually, we're going to be doing that on our first day that I had hunted out while there, because it's just like looking at the cheese counter, you would say, and then also the pastries. I could probably stay there all day just in that deli, you know, because they also had cider too. Boy, it's going to be fun. If you are interested on that Normandy trip and it's something that you're just finding out that, shoot, I'd like to go, there are still some extra slots open to come along. So again, just contact me, Rhea at ciderchat.com. Oh, it's going to be one heck of a journey. Oh, what fun we had this week hanging out with you in Ontario. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Yeehaw!